Hello, this is Irene Bullard. I'll be reading the Bloomington Pantograph dated Tuesday, October 16, 2018. Let's begin on the front page. City seeks to merge water, public works. Gleason, uniting departments would save $250K annually. Merging the Bloomington's public works and water departments likely will save the city more than $250,000 annually, but not trigger any layoffs, City Manager Tim Gleason told City Council on Monday. Public Works Director Jim Karch will oversee the newly merged department under the reorganization anticipated to increase in efficiency and improve customer service, said Gleason. Bob Yale, whose current job as Water Department Director will be eliminated, will move into the newly created position of Assistant Public Works Director. The reorganization also will include creating a Water Operations Manager and eliminating a Superintendent of Water Distribution. Jim Karch believes very strongly that this will be increased efficiency and improved customer service along the lines of a one-stop shop experience, Gleason said. The reorganization will require a couple of minor code changes for the council to approve, he said. Monday's meeting was a committee of the whole meeting. Votes on those changes will be on the October 22nd voting session agenda. This really was an opportunity that presented itself, Gleason told the council. I have in my mind a premier public works director in the form of Jim Karch, who is capable of doing more if asked and if equipped with the tools to be successful. He has said that in order to do that, he felt he would need a number two, an assistant public works director. I've got a water director currently in the form of Bob Yale, who 6 months ago notified us that he no longer wants to be a number one, a director, and has been very patiently waiting for that day to come, said Gleason. Yale's current annual salary of $121,370 will remain unchanged with the new job title. About a third of his new responsibilities will be oversight of the water department while taking on an expanded role in public works, said Gleason. Karch, who has headed the public works department since June 2009, will receive a slight pay bump from the current $137,570 to $144,745 annually. He is now absorbing an entire department, said Gleason about why Karch's salary will increase. Gleason is offering the new position of Water Operations Manager to Brett Lucian. His current position as Superintendent of Water Distribution will be eliminated with that move that will add a few thousand dollars to his salary, said Gleason. Lucian formerly served as interim water director before Yale, but he does not have the bachelor's degree required for the director's position, said Gleason, adding Lucian has solid knowledge of how to operate a water plant and an excellent relationship with the community and employees. Yale has headed the water department since 2015, but in May he notified the city that he wanted to step down. He asked to stay on as an engineer in the Public Works Department, but agreed to remain as water director until his replacement as water director was hired. Yale previously said that he was stepping down as water director because he wanted to spend more time with his family. There are no layoffs, but there would be an elimination of a contracted engineer position and a miscellaneous technician position, said Gleason. Jim Karch has communicated with the employees and with the unions on this, and look for their input for as smooth of a transition as we can possibly have, said Gleason. Fritzen not running for re-election. Normal city council member has served a total of 32 years. Normal's longest tenured council member is stepping down. Jeff Fritzen, who has served on the council since 2003, and earlier, from 1983 to 1999, will not run for re-election in 2019, he announced Monday. For me to serve, I need to know that my heart is totally in it, and looking 4 years down the road, I thought it was better to leave too soon than too late, Fritzen told the Pantograph. I let it percolate for a couple weeks here and see how that felt, and I am really at peace with it. Fritzen, 66, did not rule out another council run, but that said that he's not viewing this retirement as a refreshing break from public service, as his first council departure turned out to be. He will continue to work as executive vice president at Bloomington Offset Process Incorporated, BOPI. It's working with people, said Fritzen, of what he will miss the most about serving on the council. In this arena, you're pretty much forced to talk to people, deal with people. Sometimes you can console. Sometimes you can get relief. Sometimes you can be their voice. But in the end, things are what they are. But as long as you try, they appreciate that service. Fritzen first left the council after 4 terms, but came back to oppose a town-owned hotel in what was then still called Downtown Normal. He spent the next 4 terms helping develop Uptown into a downstate economic hub, including incentives for the privately owned Marriott Hotel that anchored it. That's an accomplishment in that we were able to move the project in a different way, and yet the whole vision of Uptown was not lost, he said. I think that says a lot about how we've conducted business. We always say that we know how to agreeably disagree and move things forward. Fritzen said that he still frequently hears from residents about not only Uptown, but also Constitution Trail, which he told the Pantograph in 1999 was his greatest accomplishment during his first council tenure. Fritzen's second council tenure also coincided with that of Mayor Chris Kuss, who he opposed for that office in 2005. Kuss beat Fritzen by fewer than 200 votes among about 5,500 cast. Fritzen went on to spend the last 2 years as mayor pro tempore, running meetings when Kuss is absent. Fritzen said that he plans to stay in Bloomington Normal, where he has deep roots. He's a graduate of McLean County, Unit 5 Schools, and Illinois State University. Spokesman for the Bloomington Normal Community Campus Committee and an elder at East White Oak Bible Church in Carlock. Council members Kathleen Lorenz and R.C. McBride, whose terms also expire in 2019, have announced that they will seek re-election. No new candidates have yet said that they are in the running. State Farm to remove iconic signage. State Farm will remove the iconic red letters spelling out its name at its former headquarters in downtown Bloomington. The company has hired local contractor P.J. Herr Incorporated, which has offices in Normal and Peoria, to remove the signage on the building at 112 East Washington Street. The 5-foot-tall State Farm letters across the top of the building that served as a beacon since the Depression era, and the State Farm insurance sign on the southwest side of the top of the building will be removed. The company stopped illuminating them several weeks ago. While we continue to actively search for a buyer, we wanted to save some items of historical interest related to the building, State Farm spokesman Jim Camariano said Monday in an email. The exterior sign is one of those elements, so we are including that as part of our preservation process. The letters are being moved to the company's headquarters at its corporate North Campus in East Bloomington. We don't know how much of the sign will be displayed or if all or part of it will be used for decorative pieces, said Camariano. That's yet to be determined. Depending on the weather, removal of the signs should begin within the next 2 weeks and could take about 30 days, said Camariano. State Farm will work with the downtown business community to minimize interruptions, including impact to travel flow during the process, he added. We will block the sidewalk below for safety as we remove the lettering from above, said Colin Logue. HERS project manager, who added, "The dimensions of the biggest letter, M, are 5 feet by 5 feet. We don't plan on using a crane. I think we can access everything from the catwalks above, so it shouldn't interfere with traffic. As part of a massive restructuring that the company said will better serve its customers, State Farm closed the downtown building in January. It was the insurer's original corporate headquarters from 1929 to 1972. By April, the company had placed the 200,000-square-foot, 13-story Art Deco building on the market for sale. Camoriano said that he has no updates on the sale. We are open to all viable options, he said. State Farm has declined to disclose an asking sale price. The building has a market value of just under $9 million, according to the McLean County Assessor's Office. Plans are also in place to transfer other important items from the downtown building, said Camoriano, adding he did not have details about what those items might be. I do know that we are working to go through all of those, and we're going to transfer everything that we believe is of historic significance because it is a very important part of our work and who we are. The restructuring has included shifting employees around the country and laying off hundreds of other workers. The realignment has included the company's information technology divisions, which the company now calls Enterprise Technology, Claims Administrative Service Divisions, and State Farm Bank. Father in custody case could leave jail in Massachusetts. The father involved in a contentious custody battle with a normal woman over their 4-year-old son may be released from a Massachusetts jail, but still would face arrest if he returns to Illinois, according to a judge's ruling Monday. Michael Cadena was arrested October the 3rd in Weymouth, Massachusetts, on a charge of direct criminal contempt stemming from his refusal to return to McLean County with his son for hearings in family court. Cadena and the boy's mother, Amber Buck, have been embroiled in court proceedings since he filed for custody of Mikey Cadena in 2014. In her issuance of the warrant in September, McLean County Associate Judge Lee Ann Hill ordered Cadena extradited from Massachusetts on the contempt charges. Cadena remains in jail in lieu of posting the $25,000 bond set by Hill. A hearing on his challenge to the extradition was set for November. In a letter to attorneys for Buck and Cadena, Hill said, "The geographic limits of the warrant would be changed to include only Illinois, meaning Illinois authorities will not transport Cadena back to Illinois." Buck was reunited with her son October the 3rd, after police retrieved the child from Cadena's family. Hill gave custody of the child to Buck in June after the father failed to appear for hearings. Cadena's attorneys in Massachusetts have appealed a ruling that denied Cadena's request to have the custody case transferred from Illinois to Massachusetts. A federal court in Peoria recently dismissed a petition from Cadena to move the matter to federal court. The change in Cadena's warrant means that he would be arrested if police find him in Illinois. He would be required to post $25,000 to be released, and he would have to serve 6 months in jail, imposed by Hill on the contempt charges. Buck's lawyer, Tristan Bullington, said the decision to recall the civil warrant came after the judge found that one element of the contempt charge had been purged because the child has returned to Illinois, which the judge had ordered at least 6 times since November. According to Bullington, a Massachusetts judge offered to release Cadena Friday on a no-cash personal recognizance bond if he agreed to return to Illinois within 48 hours, an offer that Cadena refused. "The child is seeing a counselor and is doing well since his return to his mother," said Bullington. The court dispute between Buck and Cadena has exploded in recent weeks to an ongoing dialogue on social media and the internet, most recently sparked by an emotional video created and released by the family of Mikey at the Weymouth police station the night that he was handed over to his mother. The child's obvious distress came after hours of his being passed from house to house by family members trying to avoid his transfer, said Bullington. Not shown is how happy he was to be with Amber after the video ended, said the lawyer. Bullington said Buck is not releasing any photos or video of the child on the advice of the counselor, and we ask that the public respect his privacy and allow the courts to do their job. Cadena's family and attorney could not be reached for comment. The Help Save Mikey movement now includes sales of T-shirts and three websites that have raised more than $30,000 that organizers say will be used for the child's medical care and his father's legal fees. Cadena's petition to regain custody of his son is based on allegations that Buck physically and emotionally harmed the child when he was in her care. Both parents have been convicted of drug offenses that led to placement of the child in foster care. In a January 2016 court hearing, a McLean County judge noted that both parents had criminal charges pending. The judge ruled if one parent is incarcerated, pending trial in this case, the other parent is the preferred custodian, while the first parent is in custody. Buck is on probation on drug charges. She was accused of allowing a meth manufacturing operation in her home while her two children were present. Cadena was given custody in September 2016 and left Illinois without the court's permission in March of 2017. Future hearings in the McLean County case will be handled by a new judge who will be appointed to replace Hill, who is set to retire in December. Daily Digest. Lincoln portrait set for unveiling. Pekin. A high-quality reproduction of a famous Abraham Lincoln photograph will be presented to the Tazewell County Courthouse in Pekin on October 23rd with an unveiling ceremony at 11:45 a.m. The photograph was taken in Springfield by well-known photographer Alexander Hessler on June 3, 1860, for Lincoln's 1860 presidential campaign. Printed on canvas, the image of the beardless Lincoln is encased in a richly stained wood frame and measures 30 inches wide by 40 inches tall. The permanent installation is made possible by donations from the Illinois Judges Association, the Illinois State Bar Association, and their respective foundations. The Illinois State Historical Society, which owns the glass plate positives of Hessler's Lincoln portrait, is leading a campaign to place framed copies in courthouses in each of Illinois' 102 counties in commemoration of the state's bicentennial this year. Today in History. Today is Tuesday, October 16th, the 289th day of 2018. There are 76 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On October 16th, 1793, during the French Revolution, Mère Marie Antoinette, the Queen of France, was beheaded. On this date in 1758, American lexicographer Noah Webster was born in Hartford, Connecticut. In 1859, radical abolitionist John Brown led a group of 21 men in a raid on Harper's Ferry in western Virginia. 10 of Brown's men were killed, and 5 escaped. Brown and 6 followers were captured, and all were executed. In 1916, Planned Parenthood had its beginnings as Margaret Sanger and her sister Ethel Byrne opened the first birth control clinic in Brooklyn in New York. The clinic ended up being raided by police and Sanger was arrested. In 1934, Chinese communists under siege by the nationalists began their long march, lasting a year, from southeastern to northwestern China. Thought for today. Life is a solitary cell whose walls are mirrors, written by Eugene O'Neill, American playwright, born this date in 1888 and died in 1953. Today's flick fact. Question. True or false? In terms of car traffic, the busiest intersection in Bloomington Normal is Veterans Parkway at Empire Street, but that is not the site of the most traffic accidents. The answer is, that is true. More than 40,000 cars each day pass through Veterans at Empire, but over the past 15 years, the place you are most likely to have an accident along the busy 6-lane road is Veterans at College. Normal signs off on new uptown building. A new high-rise is coming to Uptown despite a variety of concerns from the public Monday. Normal City Council signed off on a $29.2 million 5-story building on the northeast side of Uptown Circle, with $8 million in future public funding. Although speakers questioned the demand, the financing, historic preservation, parking, and public art implications of the project. The Trail East project, as proposed tonight, ticks off all the boxes from our perspective, said City Manager Pam Reese, of the town's desires for new development, which include attracting office tenants, incorporating mixed-use buildings, and using future property tax money and publicly owned land. All these commitments that we are proposing are things that we've seen before in our uptown renewal process, she continued. We're very comfortable with it. Commenters, however, questioned whether those guidelines have been sufficient in developing uptown and will create a desirable outcome for the properties at 104 and 108 East Beaufort Street to be replaced. We built a building last year to prove this market, and it hasn't, said Joel Studebaker, a Normal public library trustee of mixed-use buildings in Uptown. The one Uptown on the Circle building still has a vacant first-floor space, nearly a year after opening. The only guarantee is that one more out-of-town developer is going to speculate in Uptown using taxpayer money. Council member R.C. McBride responded that the town also is frustrated by the empty space in one uptown, and that he would like to use a local company for the new building, but no such developer exists. Mark Tiratilli, who ran for mayor in 2017 as a fiscal conservative, said the town is putting too much money into the project and hurting McLean County Unit 5 schools, which receives most property taxes in Normal, meaning it's most affected by TIFs that redirect that money, like the TIF district in Uptown. Uptown still can't attract a viable project unless we subsidize it. It's not the town's responsibility to close this gap in funding for developer Bush Construction, he said. We're spending about $10 million to reshuffle economic activity that is already here. I'm in favor of development in Uptown, but not this one. Council member Kathleen Lorenz questioned that $10 million figure, which includes future property tax money, no upfront payment, and land valued at $1.6 million that may not, in fact, be worth that much. What's it worth to me if it's sitting there with no buyer? Nothing. And we have already said the property tax value is nothing, she said, of the town-owned properties to be given to Bush and developed. Ron Ulmer, a 2017 city council candidate, said that he opposes tearing down the buildings because of their historical value. In response, Mayor Chris Koos ran down a list of more than 20 properties in Uptown that Normal government town has invested in to maintain as historic artifacts. One would think that we went down North Street and Beaufort Street and strip everything out, said Councilmember Jeff Fritzen of Community Response to the plan. We encouraged people to refurbish and restore. Elmer also noted, many central Illinois flatlanders do not like parking decks, and they will be forced to use them more after 80 spaces are eliminated for the building. City Manager Pam Reese noted, the town is studying available parking in Uptown and plans to address it soon. Mike Herbert of Normal said that he opposes the project, in part because it means destroying the community mural on the side of 104 East Beaufort. Reese noted that it would be destroyed in routine maintenance, and Councilmember Chamberlain Cummings said it wasn't a forward-thinking place to put a mural. Reese reiterated that the town hopes to replace the mural with other public art. Councilmember Kevin McCarthy suggested that include the proposed railroad underpass. Whalen challenges scientist's statement. A retired forensic scientist for the state, who handled evidence in the 1991 murder case against Donald Whalen, has expanded his initial report to explain why he changed his opinion about a bloody palm print. The affidavit of John Durker will be discussed October 23rd when lawyers for the state and Whalen meet to review the status of Whalen's efforts to secure a new trial. Whalen is serving 60 years after being convicted of killing his father, William Whalen, during a brutal fight at the 20 Grand Tap, then a bar owned by the elder Whalen in downtown Bloomington. The defense has questioned why Durker, a forensic scientist with the Illinois State Police Crime Lab, may have altered his initial April 1991 opinion that the bloody palm print found on a pool cue could not conclusively be linked to Donald Whalen. In May 1991, Durker reported that the quality of the print from the pool cue and Donald Whalen's print made an identification of the suspect possible. In court documents filed in July 2018, Durker contends that the quality of the print on the pool cue may not have been suitable for a comparison with the victim's prints. He did not address the suspect's prints on the cue. The fingerprint identification is one of several issues the defense has raised in the request for a new trial. A witness from Whalen's trial has offered new potential evidence about the amount of cash Whalen was carrying when the pair traveled to Chicago after the killing. The witness now says Whalen had a smaller amount of cash than was initially reported, according to the defense. The state theorized that Whalen stole money from his father to buy drugs. The defense also has argued that results of DNA tests on knives from the bar excluded the son as a contributor. When all the possible new evidence is put together, a case supporting a new trial emerges, said Whalen's lawyer Elliot Slosar, an attorney with the University of Chicago's Exoneration Project. I think with the evidence that exists today, no reasonable juror would convict Donald Whalen, said Slosar. In the state's response to Whalen's petition for a new trial, Assistant State's Attorney N. G. Lin argues that Whalen's potential new evidence related to the prints should be barred from consideration because the information was not filed within 2 years of the verdict. Lin also argues that the DNA evidence from knives is not reliable because the items have not been properly stored for the past 27 years. Since the trial in 1991, the knives were not kept in a contamination-free environment, said the prosecutor's motion asking for dismissal of the defense petition. In previous arguments, the state has challenged the methods used to test the DNA samples, arguing that the defense expert improperly combined material from multiple DNA samples to create one sample suitable for testing. We've come to the end of the first half hour of the Pantograph. We'll take a short break. Please stay tuned.